We present the News Quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart.
Hello, and welcome again to the News Quiz. We start with a TV listing seen on CFAX, read by Rory Morrison.
BBC One, 11:20 p.m, public opinion. Les Dennis, Vanessa Feltz, Anna Ryder Richardson and Gary Bushell discover exactly what the public thinks of them. Contains strong language.
Thanks to Dave Brockman from Raynham in Kent for that. Let's meet the teams. Please welcome first on my right, Francis Ween and Phil Jupiters. I'm facing them on my left, Alan Corran and Andy Hamilton. Francis, your traditional first easy question. Whose defective intelligence has finally resulted in an apology? And here's a clue, David Beckham comes later.
Ah. Well, you know, I mean, I could answer the question, but I won't, because I can't. Can't say. Is that what it is? Is it him? That bloke, what's his name? Blair. He won't apologise for anything. It's very, because actually I find with people of his age and class, including myself, I suppose, it's usually the opposite problem, tendency to say sorry to inanimate objects. You know, you bump into things. I mean, I do it all day long. Blair has the opposite thing. He won't say sorry even over minor things like going to war on a false prospectus. But his argument is that he could say sorry for the dodgy intelligence, but anyway he won't, because that would imply that he's sorry that Saddam Hussein is no longer running Iraq.
He did use what have become the five most meaningless words in the English language, though, didn't he, which are, I take full responsibility for... doesn't mean anything anymore, does it? I mean, it doesn't really qualify as language anymore. I mean, for Blair, I think it's the equivalent of clearing his throat, you know. I take full responsibility. And he has proved he's made a mess of Iraq, but he's also done a pretty good job on the English language. My own theory is that he's got some fantastically specialised software that he uses when he gets his speeches together, sort of a form of spell check, you know, which replaces words that it doesn't really like with words that it does, you know. So for the dossier, you know, when the intelligence was patchy and sporadic, that becomes detailed and authoritative. Possible is replaced by type impossible, you get 45 minutes.
Tony Blair has finally given an unequivocal apology over problems with the intelligence leading up to the Iraq war, but still refuses to say sorry for the way he presented it to the public. It's always difficult to admit you're wrong. I still maintain that hosting the News Quiz has enhanced my career and made me very attractive to women. Phil, why could the US presidential elections go right down to the wire?
Yes. Well, we're in the midst of these presidential debates between Bush and John Kerry, George W. Bush, a name that makes much more sense in this country than it does in America, because we can see what the W would possibly stand for. anyway, so they've been having these presidential debates, and the one that they had a couple of nights ago was about domestic policy, and they asked Bush and Kerry what their domestic plans were. And Kerry planned to, shore up the infrastructure of the health system. And Bush planned to watch the Star Wars trilogy on DVD. But the one that shook everybody up was the middle debate. I think they had three? Was it three?
Yeah,
they did? Television channels were told they shouldn't film Bush from the back. And there was this mysterious rectangular bulge between Bush's shoulder blades, and all this speculation started about what this thing was between his shoulder blades, and I dare say that the only thing Bush has felt between his shoulder blades for the last 3 years is the hot, insistent breath of Dick Cheney.
I think he just rushed out quickly and put his jacket on before they took the key out of his back.
So the speculation started amongst what the Republicans called left-wing conspiracy websites, that he was being fed information via radio and had this transmitter between his back. And apparently when he answered one question, he said that there was a minicab picking up in Beckenham. And then he played the new single by the White Stripes. It was all a bit messy. So, yes, thing, wire, radio fed answers. Points, please.
Indeed, 2 points. The US presidential candidates are neck and neck after their third and final debate amid claims that a suspicious bulge under Bush's jacket during the first clash was actually a wire. The jacket incident has reignited suspicions that Bush is just a puppet, a view strongly reinforced when Keith Harris was spotted sneaking away from the building. Bush's staff denied that he had a wire up his back feeding him lines, though their position was undermined when he was heard to say, "I'm Barbie, I like to shop." 2 points to Phil there. Andy, whose cunning card trick led to an own goal.
Is this Beckham's big idea?
It is.
The reality is that, very gifted footballer as he is, the one thing David Beckham's never really been able to do is tackle. And in the game on Saturday, he clattered into one of the Welsh defenders and got a broken rib. And David wants us to believe that he then had a flash of genius on the touchline, that he thought he would use up the yellow card that stood between him and a suspension on a game that he knew he was going to miss anyway because of his cracked rib. So he thought that he would run at the Welsh defender with a view to getting a booking and getting that suspension out of the way. And he, if we give him the benefit of the doubt and say, well, maybe that was quite bright, telling people wasn't so bright, really. So anyway, now he's said sorry. He's taken full responsibility.
David Beckham, that modern-day figure who combines the artistic genius of Leonardo with the cunning of Machiavelli, has apologised after claiming to have deliberately fouled Welsh left-back Ben Thatcher to earn a suspension for a game he would have missed anyway through injury. Beckham has received a number of injuries over the years, both on and off the pitch. 2 months ago, he suffered terrible burns to the side of his face when someone telephoned him while he was doing the ironing. 2 points for Andy Allen. Listen to this.
Look at them yo-yos, that's the way you do it. You play the guitar on MTV. That ain't working, that's the way you do it. Money for nothing and your chicks for free. Now that ain't working, that's the way you do it.
Alan, who will see nothing for their money and be in dire straits without a paddle.
This is rather close to home. A home I may no longer be able to afford. There were a lot of headlines about this. It said, one of them said, work till you're 70 and you get £50,000. I thought, at last, the news quiz, the light at the end of the tunnel. I hang on for a few years. And the other one said, people will have to work till 70. And I thought, that is 20 more years of Blair. He has switched his thing on. But it is, of course, about pensions. It's very strange that if you say people are going to have to work until they're 70 because there's no money to pay them, we're going to encourage them to spend what money they have got. Because they say, what you have to do is save. You get a large China pig and you put a penny in every week, and then when you're 109, you can go out and buy a Mars bar. However, we have changed the lottery rules, and what you'd rather do is go to a casino, we'll let you do that. So it is about pensions.
The problem seems to be that there is going to be this population of bulge of people, my generation, I think, roughly, who in 20 years' time would be drawing pensions, and they sort of try to frighten us by saying we're sitting on time bombs of poverty and that we might have no money to support us. But surely, if we are the vast bulk of the electorate, we can just vote for huge pensions. Or is that too Machiavellian? We just form the massive pensions for us of the young people party. And that's a dream ticket, that's straight in there, number 10, no problem.
Publication of the Pensions Commission report this week claims millions of Britons will spend their retirement in complete poverty. More than 12 million people over the age of 25 are not saving enough for their retirement. Instead, they're throwing it away on outrageous luxuries like housing, travel and food. At the end of round one, Francis and Phil have 4 points, but Andy and Alan are just in the lead with 5 points. And we start round two with a cutting scene in the Surrey Advertiser.
Under the terms of the Employment Rights Act 1996, an employee can take a reasonable amount of unpaid time off work if he or she falls ill, suffers injury, gives birth, or dies.
Thanks to Graham Clark for that. Francis, whose educational bars have got the secretary in a state.
It's about the headmaster of Westminster School, is it?
Exactly,
right?
Yes.
He's retired from being the head of Westminster School and decided he wanted to put something back, having been head of this very rich, expensive public school. So go back to being an ordinary maths teacher in a state school. And turns out he's not qualified to do that, despite having taught for 40 years. He's called Tristram Jones Parry. And he's going to have to start all over again and do a maths GCSE. Some nonsense.
I think it's a great idea. If the headmaster retires and wants to go back into teaching, you put him through the school by experience. You make him sit maths his first day, you put his head down the toilet, throw his cap over the wall. There seems a certain beautiful justice about it all to me.
Keep him on their toes.
A lot of men of that age pay bloody good money to be treated like school boys.
Education Secretary Charles Clark is apparently planning to reform the system of qualifying as state school teachers after Tristram Jones Parry, formerly head of Westminster School, a math teacher himself for 20 years, was told he couldn't teach in the state system. Britain has a chronic shortage of qualified math teachers. This decline in numbers has been attributed to a number of causes, including low pay, mathematicians' poor public image, and the fact that math teachers usually lack the social skills to mate. Phil, who spiked Howard's Guns of Brixton?
Ah, yes, right. Michael Howard at the conference this year, at the meeting of the undead. he made a speech about how Brixton was a lawless hellhole full of trolls and orcs, and where the Dark Lord Saruman reigned and fire came from the very heavens because there were no bobbies on the beat. And I think it was Polly Toynbee took issue with him in the pages of The Guardian, and he, like an exorcist of vengeance, took to the pages of The Guardian and said, Brixton, there are no coppers, and the crime figures are dreadful, and salvation from this tirade of nonsense actually came from Oliver Letwin, who last year said it's like Narnia with elves and pixies, and it's lovely, and the crime's gone down, and you can ride a lion around, and there are unicorns, and people pee lemonade, and... This was in a speech that he made last year at a conference, and so they've just not backed each other's story up. And so the marvellously coiffured and lacquered Oliver Letwin, whose photograph you can see on the wall of any barber throughout the land. So this Letwin fella said Brixton's lovely, and it's a bit of a potato, potato, tomato, tomato, let's call the whole thing off scenario down at Tory HQ.
But didn't Howard base his assessment of the streets of Brixton on the fact that he was walking through the streets of Brixton for 20 minutes and he didn't see a single policeman?
Well,
they're going to duck into the nearest doorway the moment they see him. He said, come to think of it, I didn't see anybody.
All I saw were crucifixes on doors, garlic hanging in the window frames. Nobody about.
Michael Howard's claim to the Tory party conference that crime was out of control in Brixton was inadvertently demolished by his shadow chancellor, Oliver Letwin, who had praised the Brixton miracle. In his party conference speech, Mr. Howard said he'd walked through the streets of Brixton for 2 hours without meeting a single policeman, but failed to answer the vital question of what he was doing cruising the streets of Brixton looking for unattached constables. 2 points to Phil. Andy, listen to this.
Like, now that's what I call rubbish clues from the news quiz. It's not available in the shops.
Whose computer love is a massive click and drag on hospital budgets?
Right. When people are trying to flog someone an IT system, they will always tell them, it seems to me, that this system can do anything. And this wonderful, wonderful... The whole idea was the whole NHS... links up into this in this fantastic example of online harmony and synergy. And guess what? It's going to cost a lot more than they said originally. I can't believe that governments still fall for this. It's, I mean, the arms industry has worked on the same basis. It is basically an initial builder's cost. So they should go back to the old system where you had a 75-year-old deaf woman who had your notes in an order that only she knew on a big sort of shelf behind the desk in reception.
The modernisation of the National Health Service computer system is expected to cost as much as £40 billion. Many critics are worried that the huge cost of the project will result in NHS hospital trusts being very stretched. And there's nothing worse than having your trust stretched in an NHS hospital.
No, too much.
Alan, why is it the end of the shingle life for Suffolk residents?
Shingle? Oh, it's that appalling place, Albro, sort of Notting Hill-on-Sea. And it's strange, like living in Just William. All the boys have open sandals and their socks down. They play tennis with wooden rackets, and it's very strange, isn't it? It's like Surbiton. Anyway, there's a lot of shingle. They're just very, very rich Londoners by the sea, and they're going to be cut off. Because something is happening along that foreshore, and the water is coming in. It's going to separate Albro from the mainland, which it is anyway, intellectually, spiritually, morally, and everything else.
Gummer has taken up their cause, because John Gummer, very few people know he's still alive, but he's the MP for Suffolk Gummer, Coastal, yeah. And this is his new big campaign to save the Suffolk coast. It's seen off Napoleon and Hitler and the rest of it, and that's going to be flooded thanks to Gummer.
He's working closely with the Famous Five and Timmy the Dog. That's exactly what he's like.
Albro Suffolk could lose its shingle beach and become an island if the sea breaks through the obsolete sea defences this winter. Scientists predict that many years from now, because of rising sea levels, East Anglians will evolve into an insular, inbred, web-footed species. Which, of course, will bear absolutely no resemblance to today's East Anglians. The end of round two. Andy and Alan have nine, but Francis and Phil have dramatically clawed back to level with 9 points. Before we start the final round, here's a classified ad seen on eBay.
Breast enhancer. Buy two and get one free.
Thanks to Peter Fowler of Boyton for that. Francis, listen to this. Francis, who's cock-a-hoop with their bionic leg up?
It's about that cockerel called Napoleon. He had his leg broken when he was attacked by a fox. This sort of thing won't happen anymore, of course, once they pass their bill banning fox hunting. I don't see how they're going to stop foxes hunting exactly, because this cockerel, this brave little creature, broke his leg and has had it mended. His first ever chicken leg mending operation. He's had a metal implant of some kind put in it, and he now struts around on his little metal leg.
The people that own him have actually put electromagnets in the farmyard now and just like driving around like a scalextric.
They've got to be rough at Christmas though, because someone's going to end up with a bit of Meccano.
What was heartening about this story though was that when the chicken went to have its leg operated on, the computer was able to make the appointment at his convenience.
This is Napoleon, the pet cockerel of Devonshire couple Mr. Canny and Miss Isham, who became the first domestic fowl to have a broken leg reset using a metal plate. Bizarrely, Napoleon was wrapped in bubble wrap to keep him warm during the operation. The vet had to improvise with the bubble wrap after the chicken freaked out every time it saw the more normal tin foil blanket. Phil, who he took the e-money and he ran.
Oh, God, this is a teenager, can't be named. From Pontypool in Wales. He went to the popular website eBay, which is the world's marketplace. It's basically, it's like a global boot sale. And this genius, this young Welsh crime lord, he basically invented things and put them on eBay, didn't exist, and sold them. You know, these completely non-existent things, and people bought them. And bought them to the tune of £45,000. And, you know, he's in Pontypool with 45 grand, he's 17, he stands out a little, you know. The mattress of his bed is on a 400-foot mountain of pornography. Which he snowboards down as he puts the lead on his pit bull panda. This kid, he just, you know, sold all this stuff on eBay, didn't exist, and the reason that he got caught is he would email the people that bought stuff of him, taunting them. I'm having a fantastic time! Thank you! I bought a flat-screen TV! You have got nothing! I am ingenious! Send the money to 23 Park Road, Pontypool. And someone passed one of these on to the scuffers, and they tracked him down. They followed him in his solid gold Nikes.
Yes, 16-year-old boy has owned up to living a life of luxury after defrauding users of electronic auction site eBay of up to £46,000. Worst example of eBay fraud was when an item described as a useful and valuable piece of mahogany turned out to be Robert Kilroy silk. Police arrived to discover a speechless and spotty youth surrounded by expensive flat-screen TVs, top-of-the-range audio equipment and brand-new computers until they realised they'd raided a local branch of Dixon's by mistake. Andy, why is it Queer Eye for the Straight, Fertile Woman this week?
Oh, this is all about the gay gene. Is that right?
Yes.
The gay gene. Now, oh, this is genetics. You see, this is complicated. I can never follow this. Women are more likely to be fertile if there's a gay bloke in the family. Now, I have a lot of trouble working that out, but apparently it's to do with this gene that they've identified. There's been a lot of stuff about sort of sexual ambiguity and confusion this week, and that's just in my private life. there was also this thing about there are a lot of asexual people. Probably some in the audience. Hands up, anyone who's asexual in the audience.
Yes, they are known as Star Wars fans.
Who apparently are making an active choice not to have a sort of sexual dimension to their life. I mean, I've gone off the question a bit here.
Yes, I may have to do that.
But I just think it's an interesting area.
Did Doctor Who ever go to the sexual dimension? As soon as he opens the door of the TARDIS, I'm glad I brought my little assistant with me.
Oh, there's also a story that the English men are the best lovers.
Foreplay.
England leads the world in foreplay because apparently English men take 20 minutes and I think that includes asking them how their day was. I'm not sure. But English men apparently take their time, put that rather delicately, didn't I? Which made me proud to be German.
A study published this week suggests homosexuality is a natural side effect of genetic factors that help women to have more children. The study seems to prove the existence of controversial gay genes. They're just like ordinary genes, but with much more flattering cut. Alan, why might there be a shortage of things that go pump in the night this Halloween?
Come on. They put armed guards on pumpkins somewhere in England because people are stealing them and sticking their heads in them. It's very dull.
The most exciting day of the year.
They're simply
spend all day in hiding from people who come up and say, "Hello, Ween." I think the
every year we have a very small gorilla turn up. The door is knocked, and this very very small gorilla is there holding his hand out. And last year, of course, you keep a stock of smarties and things by the door. And I pass this to him. There's a voice from the gate. He might say, "He can't have chocolate." And so we had some nuts. He doesn't have nuts. What does he want? Does he want a cotelette à la manière de la Vicomtesse de Bragelonne? I'll put one in the oven. So we had all these things. And can't have fruit. He's got braces on his teeth. I mean, listen, she's standing. I couldn't see this bloody woman. It's dark. I said, "What does he usually get?" She gets money. She said, "Give him money." So I gave him a quid.
Why might there be a shortage of things that go pumpkin?
People are nicking them. The pumpkin rustlers. You're getting a posse together to catch the pumpkin rustlers.
A shortage of pumpkins is forcing farmers to mount a round-the-clock guard against Halloween rustlers. If your child can't find a hollow head with a rictus grin illuminated by just a dimly flickering candle, parents are advised to give Jack Straw a ring. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along. Francis.
Simon, this is from the Daily Telegraph. It's about a spacecraft called the Cassini-Huygens spaceship, which is going to Saturn. It says the craft is approaching its destination after a 7-year and 2 billion-mile journey between the planets. While some may balk at the £2 billion price tag, which works out at a pound for every mile travelled, supporters point out that it's still cheaper than travelling the equivalent distance by train.
Phil.
I'm indebted to Owen Surridge for sending me this one. A German inventor has developed a device that berates men if they try to use the lavatory standing up, has sold more than 1.6 million units of it. If the lavatory seat is lifted, the gadget placed under the rim declares in a woman's voice, "What are you up to? Put the seat back down right away. You are definitely not to pee standing up. You will make a mess."
Andy.
This is from Matthew Wright. It's from the biography of composer Luigi Nono in The Rough Guide to Opera. His rejection of aesthetic and political compromise won him enemies, and the premiere of his Intolleranza 1960 was disrupted by neo-fascists who accused Nono of contaminating Italian music and of having a name that was a double negative.
Alan.
I got one from the Shropshire Star, Simon. Then Inspector Powell told the court that Johnson had been offensive, belligerent and obstructive. Quote, "It was obvious," he said, "that he was not going to take any notice of the police handler, who therefore had no option but to arrest him." Johnson then interrupted and said that all he'd done was tell the officer that the police dog wouldn't last 5 minutes with his cat.
Thank you all. Let's look at the final score. Andy and Alan have 18, but Francis and Phil, at the last minute, squeaked into the lead with 19 points. And before we leave you, here's a cutting scene in the Surrey Advertiser.
Police are searching for a man who broke into Guildford Lido on Monday morning, went skinny dipping and had a workout in the gym before making off with £1,000 from the safe. He also doused the alarm system in an energy drink from the fridge and caused £520 worth of damage. The man is described as white, well-built, 5'7", with short dark hair, and, when clothed, wearing a striped top and jeans.
Goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Francis Wheen, Phil Jupitus, Andy Hamilton and Alan Corran. The chairman was Simon Hoggett and the news was read by me, Rory Morrison. The chairman's script was written by Simon Littlefield, George Poles and Lucy Clark, and the producer was Simon Nichols.